Blog Talk Radio.
People make the world go round.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the Gifts of Freedom Radio Show. My name is Asia Grace, and I'll be your host for the evening. I hope our guest is here with us. Do we have Pennsylvania Charlie on the line?
This is Lorna Littleway with Juneteenth Legacy Theater.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Are you scheduled to do the show with me today?
I think I received an email from Leslie.
Okay, wonderful. Well, sorry about the miscommunication. That was on my part. However, we're still going to have a wonderful show with you. So do you mind just introducing yourself to the audience once more?
Okay, fine. My name is Lorna Littleway, and I am co-founder of the Juneteenth Legacy Theater. And we are preparing to do, we have a festival of new plays, and one of our theme areas is the 19th century experience.
Okay, wonderful. So can you give me and my audience a little background on what got you interested in doing the theater?
Well, I used to do radio news in Dallas, Texas. And when I was down there, I think it was in the early 80s, Juneteenth is a state holiday. And I had never heard of it. And so I was quite fascinated by it, and I thought, wow, this is a wonderful thing.
What is Juneteenth? Because I've never heard of it either.
Oh, okay. Well, Juneteenth, it's the date of June 19, 1865, and they sort of, like, put the month and the date together, so they call it Juneteenth.
I see.
And what it marks is the official presentation of the Emancipation Proclamation in the Western Territories. And that took place in Galveston about 2.5 years after it had been issued by President Abraham Lincoln. So it's sort of like the slaves in the Western Territories learned of their freedom about 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. And so that became a theme idea for me in starting the Juneteenth Legacy Theater Company. What we do is we develop and produce new plays about the African-American experience and its legacy. And we have 5 theme areas that we're specifically interested in. And one of the areas is the 19th century experience. And so it came about as a way of giving contemporary playwrights an opportunity to revisit history.
Wow, that's wonderful. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the plays you've produced thus far? I know that the overall topic is about the Juneteenth. Are they all the same play, or are there an array of different plays that focus on the same central idea of Juneteenth?
Well, it's an array of plays, and right now what we have over the course of 10 years, we have presented 145 plays, mostly as staged readings. And the reason that we did that format is because the original Juneteenth celebration was a 10-day affair. When the slaves had heard the message in Galveston, they traveled to Dallas, and they celebrated the news of their freedom for 10 days. And
wow.
One of the things that they did was they told stories about their experience. So that's why I got the idea Well, we would present stage reading because what we wanted to do is we wanted to emulate the original Juneteenth celebration. And so we did stage readings to replicate the telling of stories amongst the community about their individual experiences.
I see. So do you know why, or what would you say to someone if they asked what was the importance of celebrating Juneteenth? I understand that it was important to the slaves, but for us now in modern day times, why is it so important to focus on a celebration such as that?
Well, what was happening, what our ancestry was doing, is they were declaring their independence. They went away for 10 days and did what they wanted to do, and this was a new type of experience. So one of the mottos is that understanding the past is the key to knowing the past is a key to understanding our present state, and a better
right.
understanding of our present state projects us well into the future. So that's why we celebrate Juneteenth, because it was our people and how we celebrated our freedom, learning about freedom.
Do you know if the Juneteenth is widely celebrated elsewhere or outside of the theater community? Are you a part of any other organizations?
Well, actually, as far as I know, that we are the only Juneteenth celebration that focuses in theater, theater as a medium. Most often you'll have communities that will do, you know, in a sense that it is a street fair or a street festival, a community festival for maybe a weekend.
Right.
Juneteenth celebrations used to be very popular before World War II, and also when we were not quite such an industrialized community because, you know, employers aren't going to be inclined to give you the day off.
Right.
Unless, as it's going to happen this year, Juneteenth is going to fall on a weekend.
Well, my next question is, what inspired you personally to get involved with Juneteenth? I understand what you're saying about the historical relevance and how impactful it was to our ancestry, but you personally, how did you get involved with the history and the celebration and your passion for it now?
Well, you know, I was just intrigued that, A, this was not something that I knew anything about.
Mm-hmm.
B, that Texas made Juneteenth a state holiday. And so I got very interested in the West anyway. And what I became very interested in is, you know, how our history sort of gets obliterated. And so it just opened up a whole new world for me. And one of the reasons why, you know, the company was originally founded in Louisville, Kentucky. And Louisville was like the last outpost when fugitive slaves were captured and to be returned to their masters. They were held in Louisville because, you know, crossing the Ohio River was that first step towards free territory. So, I was teaching at the University of Louisville at the time that I started the theater company. So there was that historical significance right there in the city where I happened to be working.
Wow.
And I actually had someone to point out to me where did they think the low point of the river was, so, you know, where we went ahead and crossed over into, what is that on the other side? Indiana is on the other side.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, you know, it's just kind of like sitting in the cradle of your own legacy. You know, you get very excited about it. As a matter of fact, there is a marker, I think it's located on either 3rd or 2nd Street in Maine, that notes that of the significance of that street corner, that the jail used to be there, and that's where fugitive slaves were held until their masters would come and pick them up.
Wow. So you were pretty much right in the center of everything. It was like everything was right there for you. You just had to delve into it. So with your theater company, or what inspired you to open the theater company in the first place?
Hello. We also have another person on the line, Ms. Gaskin.
Oh, okay. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Hi. Is this Pennsylvania Charlie?
This is he. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. I was having some technical difficulties earlier.
Oh, that's
okay.
Fine. Well, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and let them know who you are?
Thanks for having me on. Pretty much my name is Pennsylvania Charlie, African-American cowboy. If some people like that term, it's a long history about how that term came about, dealing with black history. Basically, that's about it. My roots are from the South. My mother's half of the family is through Tennessee. My father's half is basically Cherokee. My mother's half is African-American. My father's side of family through Florida, tracing all the way back through Oklahoma, and there's history with Oklahoma involving Native Americans in general, Cherokee per se, and a lot of history involving African Americans in Oklahoma. Currently, I reside in Pennsylvania. That's a long story, too.
Oh. All right. Well, can you? You said that there's a lot of history there. Do you mind touching on that for our audience today?
Yes.
Behind African American cowboy term. I meant to specify.
Which first, about the term, the cowboy term?
Well, that's what you opened with. You said that there was a lot of history behind why people.
We can get into the cowboy term first.
Great.
A lot of people, first of all, wonder. You know, they look at me and other African Americans, and then they wonder. They say, "What are any black cowboys?" And the term is actually an oxymoron. It's stating like almost stating a double truth in a sense, because the term cowboy, a lot of African-American historians have found out, was actually a derogatory term. Now, I still use the term cowboy because it's hip, it's called on, and but if you actually study history, it's actually a derogatory term used to describe black cow hands, black cow punchers. The white men and women who were involved in the cattle industry were actually called cowhands, cow punchers, wranglers. Some who were in the illegal side of it was called hustlers, but they were never called cowboys. Boy was a derogatory term. So in referring to a black cowhand, you were referred to as a cowboy. You know, for a white person to ask were there any black cowboys is ironic, being that they're the ones who invented the term and coined it for black people
black
who were
people.
Working in the Old West. So that's just amazing on that end of it, that little bit of history. So when they asked was there a black cowboy, it's like the term itself would suggest that there were. And, of course, we all know history says 25%. My research give me 1 out of 3 cowboys.
Hello?
In the West were actually black.
How many? I'm sorry.
My research give me 1 out of 3.
Really?
Yes. Layman studies say 25%, which would suggest 1 out of 4. The West was mostly an opportunity for African Americans to start a new life.
Yep.
Unlike what you see in Hollywood, it wasn't the segregation that people speak of. Granted, you had Southerners who migrated west, but the tension of racism in the air wasn't as thick and as solid as it was in the South. It was a chance, really, for everyone to start over new, you know. So it was a pretty interesting bit of history. You know,
so what initially got you interested in African American cowboy history or cowboy history overall?
Myself personally, well,
yeah.
It was pretty much a family tradition coming through on my father's side. You know,
your father's from a family of cowboys.
I'm sorry.
You said your father was from a family of cowboys.
Yes, which it wasn't mostly on my mother's side, not at all, but mostly on my father's side. And it pretty much grew on you. Now, that doesn't mean every male in my family was a cowboy. Some started out, drifted away. It pretty much grew on me. I loved it ever since, and I just love the lifestyle. And, you know, it has its ups and downs. But plus, when you study, not only just being a cowboy physically and doing the work and working on dude ranches and what have you, but when you actually study, you know, the scholastics behind it, the history of African Americans involved in the cattle industry, it's a wide history, definitely a wide history.
Well, me, I've always been a city girl, so I have no clue what happens on the Duke Ranch or what cowboys even go through besides what you see in movies. So can you give us a little overview of a typical day in the life of a cowboy?
Basically, you just get up early, around 4. Depending, basically, like I said, we use the term so loosely now, it's really only supposed to be directed to men and women who handle cattle. Okay, but you have some who will take the term cowboy, and they don't handle cattle or cows per se or bulls. They handle horses, but they still carry the label of cowboy. Then you have some who are sportsmen, who are bull riders and do it for sport, and who carry the label of cowboy. So when we say cowboy, if we're talking as far as actually cattle industry, it's just basically, you know, you wake up early, usually around about 4 o'clock, about 4-ish. And then you basically have to tend to the horses, grooming them, feeding them, preparing them for the day, legging them. Legging just simply means running, just like humans keeping in shape. The horses are the same way.
Really?
That's all, you know, basically keeping them in shape and running and stuff like that. Just that kind of a thing, you know. It's pretty easy.
So with the current economy, we're being in a recession and all, how does that affect cowboys or your business, your industry overall?
Actually, you'll hear a lot of the media saying that it affects. It really, at least I haven't felt the effect of it. I can't speak for everybody. You know, you might have various people feeling various pinches of the economy from different locations of the United States. But I myself, I can say I honestly haven't felt that pinch personally. And I really haven't heard any African-American cowboys speaking of it as well. But, you know, if it's out there, it is, but they kind of really hasn't. Because you have to understand, too, you get a lot of grants. I mean, it's really something that anybody could get into. Like you yourself, you could get into it. You know, they have grants out there from the government where you could get free land. You could get free animals. You could get free veterinary care. But the only thing is you have to basically show the government they will come out and do the inspections. So you basically have to show the government that you've been taking care of the land, that you've been taking care of the cattle, that they've been going to the regular checkups. And actually, they don't go. The actual doctors come out to your land to do the regular checkups and everything like that, and it's all free. It's all free. And, it's something really anybody could get into and really get involved in. And when you had mentioned about we talked about land given for free, this is something that's not a phenomenon recently. This actually took place in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in Oklahoma, started off as a supposed to be an all-black and Native American state. That was what Oklahoma was designed to be. A lot of people will tell you it's pretty much it was set aside for Indian territory. But the truth of the matter is it was supposed to be a state for African Americans and Native Americans in Oklahoma.
This is Charlie. This is Leslie. I have a quick question for you. Wasn't Oklahoma originally was supposed to be named Sequoia?
Rumors have it that that was what it was supposed to be called, and I've ran across studies of that. So I definitely would not discount that at all. It makes all practical sense. It was predominantly a lot of Cherokee in the area, and they still exist there to this day. Oklahoma is pretty much, according to what my family told me, and basic research, was the culmination for the Trail of Tears. Basically, where the Trail of Tears culminated. And also, along with the Trail of Tears, there were also African Americans along there as well. That's
Can you tell the audience a little bit about the Wall Street, Black Wall Street?
Yeah, absolutely. Black Wall Street, a lot of people hear that term, and it was also known as, let me get my facts right, I think they call it Negro Wall Street as well, and it was also called Little Africa. And once again, we're talking about Oklahoma, and it was basically a section of town where commerce was huge. We're talking about Greenwood. You're familiar with the area, right? Hello?
Yes, I am. I am familiar with it.
Yes, in Greenwood, and basically the town during the 20s, pretty much they even start off before we start talking. Let's just say that the town of Greenwood, Greenwood's story actually made Rosewood look like an afterthought. I mean, we all know about Rosewood. A lot of us seen the movie Rosewood. It's a popular movie among African Americans, and it basically makes that look like an afterthought. It was a massacre at basically, we put at 3,000. Bodies were dumped into rivers. Bodies were put into mass graves. Okay, and the media gently put the number at, some even said the number was 39 people killed. Others said 300. But
now, thank you, Pennsylvania Charlie. Are you there, Ms. Juneteenth?
Yes, I am.
Do you want to add? You know, you can chime in at any time.
You know, it's fascinating what he was saying because one of the things after the 10-day celebration in Dallas is that people fanned out into Oklahoma, New Mexico, and traveling north to find their relatives and to also spread the word about the emancipation. And, you know, it, for what Juneteenth was a very hot thing celebrated in Oklahoma and the other contiguous states with Texas. And so I've just been fascinated listening to what he's been saying. And we did have a play, we did receive a play that talked about the interconnectedness between the Native Americans and the African Americans. And, you know, what he was talking about, the Trail of Tears and the relocation of the Cherokee Nation, and also because I think the Cherokees also had slaves too, and they were relocated with them. And so, you know, this is all very fascinating and tying in with Juneteenth.
Great. That's exactly what we wanted you two to do, was to dialogue and to share your book, you know, share your histories with one another. So please do
right.
not hesitate to interact with one another.
Right. Also, too, we just want to state in the city of Greenwood, during those riots, it was 600 businesses lost, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, movie theaters, post office, libraries, schools, law offices. We had private airplanes, we had a bus system, we had hospitals, we had 21 churches. It was pretty much the fact that the African American community right there was so successful that the dollar circulated maybe 600, 700, 800 times. It took months for that $1 to even leave the community.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you know, a dollar can leave the community within 5 minutes.
Right.
So basically, it was an infrastructure that African Americans put together solely on their own. And they developed a very metropolis, cosmopolitan way of life. And it was just awesome how we interacted and how we survived off each other. Because you have to understand, it's a time of segregation. So we could only depend on each other. There was a time when we had no one to depend on but ourselves, and it worked. It flourished. And a lot of people basically say that jealousy is what spawned the attack. Others have reports of an incident of a lynching that took place in the town previously, and there was a threat of another lynching because there was a rumor that an African-American had assaulted a white woman. And the KKK, 2 years previously to this, have always been trying to destroy the town. Constantly, and they believe they found their excuse to inflame. And planes attacked the city from above. It was just like a total massacre. 10,000 blacks were left homeless, without a home whatsoever. It was known as what you called it, Black Wall Street. Others call it the Black Holocaust. But like I said, we've all seen the movie Rosewood, and you can't even put it in the same breath to even compare. That's how terrible, if I could find some word to describe it, of the incident that took place in 1921.
Ms. Juneteenth, do you have anything to add to that?
What I'm discovering from the plays that we're receiving is that post-Civil War era was actually a very good economic time for black people. a lot of small businesses and very entrepreneurial spirit. And so, you know, we kind of like, we don't really hear very much about that era, but it really with small businesses and, you know, that's like C.J. Walker comes out of that time and everything like that. And it was a very good, we put our resources very good to work for our communities. And often that black man assaulting a white woman was a trumped up charge in order to really destroy a community that was really being quite successful.
Right. If you look at Rosewood, it was the same charge as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so the charge became typical and inflaming and destroying communities. And like I said, Oklahoma was set aside for a black and Indian state. And we study Malcolm X. We study history of Malcolm X. How he proposed that blacks should have a separate state, et cetera, et cetera. Well, history always repeats itself. There's nothing new under the sun. It had already been proposed and was actually working, and that was the state of Oklahoma, to be a black and Indian state. In fact, they wanted to choose a black governor. You imagine in 1921?
Mm-hmm.
They actually proposed to choose a black governor, a treasurer from Kansas. And I believe his name was McDade or McCade. I believe it was McDade. I'm not sure. I think it might have been McDade. But the KKK told them, basically, if he take office, he'll be dead in 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the kind of environment that was going on in Little Africa, Black Wall Street, Negro Wall Street.
And there are any number of blacks who also served in the cavalry out there. We received a very interesting play called Matote, which talks about African Americans in the Southwest, in the Southwest area. There too. So I mean, there is a lot of, you know, we have a very strong legacy in what's called the West, but when you look at popular media, we're very much missing from that story.
Of course, of course, and that's just pretty much being written out of history. That only media. That's pretty much about the only reason for that. You're just pretty much written out of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just basically the West was so many opportunities for black people at the time.
Right,
you know,
that's where we went. I mean, I had people in my family
right.
who moved
mm-hmm.
from Florida and Georgia, and they headed
mm-hmm.
west towards Kansas.
Yeah, I was actually born in California.
Oh,
my
okay.
family are nomads. And basically, yeah, we moved over to Pennsylvania because my father found work in Pennsylvania, and that's how I moved to Pennsylvania. I was actually born in California. Yeah, so our family's from all over the place, and we constantly move. I think I'll be settled
Excuse me,
in this
Pennsylvania,
area.
Charlie, I have a quick question before the show ends.
Yes.
Could you tell the audience who is Sequoia George Gist?
Yes, real briefly run down real quick. He was Cherokee from Oklahoma, and the important fact to note here was he had never, ever read written script. He was not literate, yet he was able to invent a writing system for the Cherokee language, the Cherokee tongue, and able to make a writing system so that everyone could read and basically communicate a system of writing for the Cherokee. At that time, a lot of people actually, they thought it was sorcery. They didn't know what was going on. But he traveled to different Cherokee nations. He traveled to Arkansas, where Cherokees were as well, and convinced the various chieftains among the people to adopt his way of thinking. And basically, when he would write down words, or he would let the people speak, then he'll write the word down. And the witnesses, he would have them leave the room. And then he would bring them back in the room and say, read this paper. And once the chiefs actually heard them recite what they spoke, then his system was validated and they began to trust him and stuff like that. So his writing system began to basically spread rapidly. And in fact, because of this, the Cherokees became more literate than the actual white settlers in the area.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing with us, both of you. I thank you so much for coming to our show today. Sadly, our show time is up. So,
yeah, it's a great show. Thanks for having us.
I've had a wonderful time.
Thank you for sharing and informing me and my audience about all our history that we don't see, like you said, that's excluded from the media and what we learned today. So, again, Thank you very both very much. My name is Asia Grace, and this has been your Sunday evening edition of Gifts of Freedom Radio Show. Have a wonderful week, and we'll meet up next Sunday for a new topic. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.